This is Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. It is a heavy day today. All across the country, Americans are mourning the deaths of 19 children and two adults at the hands of an 18-year-old gunman at an elementary school in Texas. Less than 2 weeks after another 18-year-old shot and killed 10 people at a grocery store in a predominantly black neighborhood in Buffalo, New York. Well, today is also the second anniversary of the killing of George Floyd at the knee of a police officer in Minneapolis. So now, inundated with news about these mass shootings and these racist acts, many people are struggling to figure out and to process the flood of sad and disturbing information. With us today to discuss these recent events and how to work through them, we have Dr. Denise Shervington. She's a professor and chair of the psychiatry department at Charles R. Drew University Medical School here in Los Angeles. Doctor, welcome to you.
Thank you so very much. I'm honored to be here. Thank you.
I'm honored to have you. And Ian Soleimani is a DJ and a resident of Santa Barbara who's recently dealt with some racial trauma as well. And Ian, I want to thank you for being with us here today as well.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Shervington, not again is this phrase that a lot of folks are using today. Not again. How can we deal with this again? Explain how you process what happened in Texas yesterday in a predominantly Latino community and school there.
Well, it's very unfortunate that we don't have breaks in between these acts of violence. And what is very painful for me is the compounding of all the traumas we've been through. We're making it through the pandemic. We know very well that we're coming upon George Floyd's second anniversary, and those images linger for us. A week or so ago, the shooting of innocent folks just going to the supermarket. And yesterday, those little babies, it is almost like it's too much, but of course, we're going to have to try to make it through. And then just the ongoing assaults, some of them aggressive, some of them not so aggressive, that oftentimes people of color endure on a day-to-day basis. I think we're hitting a boiling point.
What does that mean, though, boiling point? Because you say we it's just this onslaught. And believe me, I've been doing news for 30 plus years, and it seems like this onslaught is just every day it's something big. I think it's also not helped by the fact that we have so much information before us as well, and so many ways to get that information. You know, it used to be you had a radio or a TV, right, or a newspaper that you read in the morning or the afternoon, and that was about it. That's how you got your information. Now you've got your cell phone, you've got your laptop computer, you got everything, podcast, you got everything else telling you how terrible the world can be. How do you try and navigate that and keep a sound mind?
I think, to me, the most important thing is to face what is happening. Because if we don't, the tension, the stress builds up, and we become at really high risk for developing mental health conditions like anxiety disorders or PTSD or depression or a combination of all of that. So to me, how we get through it is to sit with it, to try to understand how did we get here, why are we getting here, to have these conversations we're having, to turn to each other for possible solutions, for what each one of us can do. I think that's how we get through it without really losing it totally and developing conditions where we're sad, we're anxious, we're afraid, we can't sleep, we have negative thoughts.
Ian, I understand after the shooting in Buffalo, you left your day job at a grocery store, which is completely understandable. Are you comfortable talking about that decision and where it came from?
Yeah, well, just, you know, that was kind of the last straw that broke the camel's back, you know, watching that and dealing with what I've been going through on my own, you know, off and on for the 20 years I've been up here. So, you know, just it was a better decision. It was the right decision for me to make. And, you know, it just sometimes it takes things like that for you to make sudden moves. You know, everything happens for a reason. I'm a firm believer of that. It just it didn't make me feel comfortable being a seafood manager at a grocery store in a predominantly white and Latin environment here. You know, God forbid something like that could happen to me. You know, unfortunately, there's only a 2% African-American population up here, so it weighs on you.
You had a video that went viral, and someone pointed that out to you as you were recording this pretty tense conversation outside a restaurant, was it? It was a restaurant, right?
Correct.
And it was, I mean, this woman that you were recording, she said some pretty racist things. She, you know, I don't want to get into what happened there, but I wonder how you handle stress like that in the moment.
Experience, unfortunately. You know, I'm an 82 kid. You know, I'm from Monrovia, Pasadena, California area, born and raised there. So, you know, I've seen a lot. And now since I have kids, you know, I have two boys, you know, a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old. And reaction comes into your mind and how you're going to. And, you know, with experience, unfortunately, you learn how not to react. You kind of get numb to it after a while. And with the combination of that and my thinking about my kids, I just found that to be a teachable moment to show them how to react so that they can learn with an example. Unfortunately, it's that kind of example
that we see over and over and over again, sadly. Dr. Shervington, a recent poll, I think this was the Washington Post, found that 3/4 of Black Americans are worried that they or someone they love will be attacked because of their race. In your experience, Doctor, how do many Black people process the events of Buffalo that happened? I mean, you just heard Ian said he left his job because of it.
Yeah, you know, I think we all, to some extent, experience racial trauma. It's collective. We carry some of it in our unconscious. And so it really depends on our defensive structure, how we're going to manage. But we all, as Black people, as African Americans, have to deal with racism. We live in a society that's quite racist. And so for someone like Ian, he has had to, one, he said, basically, this is normal, I'm used to it. So we have to use that defensive structure to say, this is my reality. And sometimes we have to dissociate. We have to pretend that it's not happening. And then sometimes it gets under our skin and it creates a lot of anxiety. It creates, for some people, depression. And I have seen folks who really truly experience post-traumatic stress disorder. We, to some extent, are in that space beyond managing the extreme stressor in healthy ways versus ways that make us sick.
Ian, what would you ask Dr. Shervington? How would you articulate, you know, some of the things that you're feeling right now to her, if you wanted to talk directly to her?
You know, as a father, should I expect change?
I think the capacity for hope is what has built our resilience over the generations. And I know that when, like, you're going through what you're going through, the direct assault on your Blackness, that in the middle of it, you have to allow yourself to feel what you're feeling. I can certainly sense sadness, maybe a little anxiety, which is why you removed yourself from a place that didn't feel safe. And I think, you know, you allow yourself to go through that sufficiently that you can understand why. And then I think we have to hang on to the possibility that as a human race, we can do better. And maybe look at the ways that you can help your sons to, one, to understand their own true value and their worth, and to begin to find ways to know that they matter, and to also respect that other people matter. I think if individually we can assume this attitude and collectively continue to have these conversations, continue to know where our communities are that we can rely on during these difficult times, I think you can make it. And I'm hoping that your sons will make it. And I'm hoping that you won't have to deal with anything that happened like a day ago with your children, or some kind of brutality that's with, you know, some kind of racist brutality. We have to hold on to that, because if we become hopeless, then we will drop into despair and depression.
Thank you. It's made me really, doctor, it's made me, half of my body just feels completely numb. Very sad. The other half is just violently angry.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to sit, and I sit with that every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't show it. I'm just quiet. And like I said, with the change, you know, I remain hopeful, but I just stop thinking about it. Because every time I think about it, something else happens, and it's counterproductive sometimes, I feel like. But, you know, I will remain hopeful. And it's just hard to swallow when it's so consistent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Shervington, do you have folks talking to you about things like this all the time? I mean, does it happen frequently among your clients?
Well, certainly if there are factors outside that happen to trigger memories, then, you know, as Black people, we talk about that. Oftentimes, when I say I'm doing psychotherapy with people of color, we don't lead with that. You know, it's almost as if there's a space that we hold, because at times it's a bit overwhelming to think that you live in a society where you're devalued and you don't matter. So oftentimes I have to create a space that someone feels comfortable, that little piece of themselves that they don't trust, they're not sure they can talk about. I think, Ian, I don't think you lead in your relationships with people about the daily onslaughts of racism. Sometimes it's too much. But when I see someone who comes to me who is struggling, who is suffering, I know that at some point when that person feels comfortable enough and I make them feel that it's a safe space, that we will get to it and we will talk about it.
Ian, may I ask you, I mean, what are some of the things that you do that, and your family with your two boys, that bring you joy? What are the things that bring you happiness?
Being able to play catch with my son, you know, watching them eat and watching them wake up, watching them go to sleep, hanging out with them. It's, you know, it's these moments that I can't get back. So every moment is pretty much a priceless moment with my family.
How you doing today?
Struggling big time.
Dr. Shervington, how you doing today?
I tell you the truth, I'm struggling too. I'm trying to imagine what it feels like for the caregivers, the parents, those who love those kids. And I had just, you know, had stopped looking at the images of the older folks whose lives were taken away in Buffalo, worrying about what their family members, this was just an ordinary day in their life. They thought they were going to go back home with groceries. And I was just making it through that one. And then comes the children. And it feels very unsafe at this time. Certainly, as Ian and I were talking, we're going to have to own the reality. This is the world in which we live in. We find our ways to push through without not always having it at the forefront of our psyche, but knowing that it's there and knowing that we have to be prepared. But it's difficult. It's really difficult at this time.
I mean, we have to know about what's happening in the world, right? But sometimes we get just so inundated mm-hmm. with it that, mm-hmm. that it overwhelms us.
And I think at that point, we have to pull back a little bit. You know, we really can't always be focused on exactly what's going. Not that we're avoiding, but we don't have to keep having the re-signification of all the trauma and the suffering in the world. Sometimes we have to play with our children or go take a walk or say we're not going to watch the news for the next couple of days. That's why I listen to your radio station. I hear groovy music, you know, at times during the day. So they're the little things we do, hopefully not in avoidance, being mindful that these things are happening, but knowing that there can be sensory overload if we're just taking in so much of that traumatic imagery.
I want to thank you both for coming on and talking to us about what's going on in your lives. Obviously, Ian, there's a lot happening. Dr. Shervington, I know that you know you have so much with the people that you deal with on a day-to-day basis, and I'm so glad that we had a chance to talk about this. Dr. Denise Shervington, professor and chair of the psychiatry department at Charles R. Drew University Medical School here in L.A. Ian Soleimani, resident DJ up in Santa Barbara. Thanks to you both. God bless you both.
Thanks, and same to you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, coming up, finding some joy with food in Silver Lake and a new Indian pizza place that also serves a sports bar. That's yours when we're back on Greater LA.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Used to be you'd drive down Sunset Boulevard in Silver Lake and see that doctor's office sign that rotated. You remember the one. One side a smiling, happy foot, and the other side a sad foot on crutches. I remember a friend telling me whatever you saw first was the kind of day that you would have. Yeah, I know. The sign is long gone, but that former clinic has been turned into a new Indian sports bar that features pizzas and screens all over the place. And Mona Holmes knows all about it. She's a reporter at Eater LA, a regular, of course, with us on Greater LA. Hey, Mona.
Hi, Steve.
All right, there's so much going on here. An Indian pizza parlor slash sports bar. What's going on at Pizza Palace? I mean, you've been and you've checked it out, right?
I have. First off, just for clarity, Pizza is a casual Hindu term for pizza. But as far as the whole idea, the whole restaurant, it's so fresh. It is so clean. It is so new and unique. I dine out a lot for this gig. And so it's very rare when I'm surprised by a place that's got some uniqueness to it. And Pizza Palace is it. So I hate using the term like vibe for a restaurant, but it's full of vibe with really great food. I love it.
What is different about Indian pizza? Is there anything different?
Oh, there's plenty. Apparently, this is very common in India. You know, there are pizza parlors all over this planet, but particularly in India. But the thing that makes this so unique is that there's a bit of a thinner crust. It's almost got a light crispness to it. It's very different from Neapolitan style or even really any style that I've had in a very long time. But what the owner does is have 12 or 16 inch pizzas, and you can either have the pre-made type or just choose your sauce. And if you're familiar with Indian food, some of these ingredients will sound familiar. So you can have a sauce with a base that's called that's got makhani in it. And so that's got tomato, spices, and cream. You can also try their white korma sauce, so almost like a white pizza. But it's got, the flavor has sweet onions, yogurt, spices. So that's that. There's the huge differences. And then you can have whatever toppings that you want, but they're going to have some kind of Indian flavor, from spice levels to heat levels. The two are very different. And it's just this really great place that I can't wait to go back to.
I couldn't help but look at the, so when you look at the menu, you see okra fries, number one, which is also a little odd. Sag pizza. Mm-hmm. Rigatoni, chicken wings. I mean, these aren't foods that we always associate with Indian spices and flavors, right?
Mm-hmm. Let me talk to you about that malai rigatoni. It is so good. It is the thing that I dream about. It's got tomato. It's got cream. It's got plenty of coriander. It's creamy, spicy, and really just a great pasta with good texture and just incredible flavor. And then the fried okra is just a really nice, I mean, I hate to even describe it as fries. It's just lightly dusted with Indian spices. And, you know, it's just the thing that you and your friends or family are going to sit down and just finish in a matter of 2 minutes. So it's really hard to explain how this all manages to come together while you're surrounded by 13 TV screens that has sports.
Playing. All kinds of sports, right? Yeah. Encouraging people to go and watch.
All kinds, sure.
Would you consider this like a fusion place, or is it authentic? I mean, obviously he's an Indian chef. Would you call it just an Indian place?
I would, actually. I would call it an Indian pizza parlor sports bar. The owner, Avish, he worked with a really great chef that used to work at Roberto's in Culver City, another pizza parlor, to bring these flavors together. And it's a true collaboration. But Avish grew up here. And so while his, you know, of course he went to culinary school, he worked at different places doing externships at fine dining Indian restaurants in the past. But he wanted to serve someone who was more into the NBA finals than Wall Street. So that's pretty much what inspired him. And he was also inspired by chefs like Roy Choi, who embraced ideas that resonated with him as an Angeleno. So I would absolutely draw some parallels here. And that's what you have with this Silver Lake restaurant.
Little sweet, little heat, and of course, a lot of sports on the TV screens. Mona Holmes, reporter at Eater LA and a regular here on Greater LA. Mona, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, we've got much more of GLA coming your way. I hope you'll tune in and subscribe to the podcast anytime at kcrw.com/GLA. Get Greater LA delivered fresh to your feed. And support KCRW while you're there. If programs like ours are important to you, connecting with people and places of Southern California, then how about a little support to keep it going as well and help us to continue? It's the last day, our final day of our spring pledge drive. KCRW is your community. We are always going to be there for you. We will give you the news that you need to know, some of it awful, and then provide you some relief in the form of music and culture and entertainment and the arts, too. Again, final day of our pledge drive. We have one last challenge in place to cross the finish line. Donate by midnight tonight to have your gift matched up to $50,000 by KCRW board member Kevin Systrom. KCRW.com/give. That's KCRW.com/give. And thank you for your support of public radio. Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Rebecca Ludman, Sonia Geis, John Meek, Phil Richards, Amy Tok, Christine Comito, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all made today's show happen. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your ears. Have a great day.